Welcome to this episode of Blended, Blessed, and Always a Mess. I'm Eric.
And I'm Angie.
We are married with a ton of kids.
We have 6 kids total. He has 3 and I have 3.
My name's Hallie and I love riding horses.
I'm Lexi and I love agriculture.
My name's Carter and I love eating.
My name's Chase and I love lifting weights.
My name's Summer and I love spending my parents' money.
I'm Dane and I love baseball.
Our show is about our blended, blessed, and always a mess life. And our hope is if you find yourself in the same situation we are in, that by sharing our story, all the fun and all the mess, the challenges we are experiencing, it will give you some inspirations, laughs, and community, knowing you are not alone in this mess.
We appreciate you spending time with us. Let's dive in.
This episode of Blended, Blessed, and Always a Mess is sponsored by the children's book Feathers Matter. As our kids grow up, they face challenges in their life, and knowing their self-worth and their value is crucial to face the headwinds. Purchase this beautiful story to read to your kids and grandkids and start the conversation with them at a young age. They are worthy, they matter, and their feathers matter. You can find the link to order on our Blended, Blessed, Always a Mess.com page. Mention code hashtag blessed for an autographed copy. Welcome to this week's episode of Blended, Blessed, and Always a Mess, where Angie and I are super excited because we have an author joining us today from Canada, actually. Katie Cooperman is joining us. Katie, we are thrilled to have you and excited to hear more about your book, which we can kind of relate to.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Let's just dive right in. Katie, do you want to tell us just a little bit about you and your story?
Absolutely. So, for a long time, I have been running my own content writing business. And I've been writing all kinds of stories from websites and blogs and marketing materials. And then that morphed into ghostwriting people's books and bringing their big stories to life. And after doing that for several years, it became very apparent to me that I wanted to bring my own story to life. There was just one problem at that point, and that is that I had no idea what I wanted to write about. That is until I'll never forget this day. I was at the gym and I'm on the elliptical and I'm just having my regular workout, and I somehow come across Amanda Todd's story. And Amanda Todd, for those of you who don't know who she is a teenager who used to live in British Columbia, Canada. And she has a very tragic story that ended up going viral kind of around the world through this one YouTube video she put up, which was so raw, so transparent, her just sharing all her struggles with the world. And there were no words. So this video that I came across, it's just flashcards, and she's just going through the flashcards telling this story, and it's literally bringing me to tears on the elliptical, and I'm trying to contain myself and can't. But that was my aha moment. I knew I wanted to write about bullying, and I didn't even know at that point that it might morph into elements of mental health. That was kind of along my journey of writing. It kind of took me there. I didn't realize that at first. So the book is definitely inspired by Amanda Todd. It is a story about bullying. It's a fictional story, so it is not her story, but I was moved by the way she told her story and shared that with the world in such a vulnerable way. I'm happy to say that, you know, since that time and after writing it and bringing it all together, I felt really compelled before I published it to honor her name in some way. And I got in touch with her mom. I sought her out. Her mom also still lives in British Columbia, and she gave me permission. And so I'm happy to say the book is dedicated to Amanda Todd, and part of all proceeds are donated to the Amanda Todd Legacy Society, which gives me some added purpose as well.
That's beautiful. I think we talk a lot about this podcast about finding purpose in the pain. And even just thinking about her mom, like that had to mean so much to her to have her name honored. I can speak from a grieving mom that anytime someone says Hallie's name, it's just like, it might make you cry, but it's also beautiful because you know she's still being remembered.
Absolutely. The story lives on.
Yes, for sure. And that's another reason why I wrote Feathers Matter. I want people to say Hallie's name when they're reading it.
Yeah, such a beautiful book you wrote.
So thank you. Can you share a little bit of the storyline in the book? Like, what is it really about? Obviously, we know the high level, but can you share a little bit about the narrative?
Yeah, absolutely. So this story chronicles the lives of two best friends as they enter high school together in grade 9. Now I'm saying grade 9 because it was based sort of the way we do it in Canada, but I know it can be different depending on where you are. But in any case, entering
our kids go 9 too, so we're on the
okay, perfect.
Yeah.
That's good. So, you know, they're entering high school together. There's all these emotions of excitement and nervousness and kind of catching your bearings. And it isn't too far into that experience that one of them has this very minor altercation with another kid at school. And it's a little bit, you know, it catches them off guard, these two best friends, but they don't think anything of it right away. And then what happens is those incidents progress and other things start to happen, of which the main character isn't always aware. So that best friend and the people around the girl who's now being bullied relentlessly, not everyone knows. And so it's not common knowledge. And there is this silence around what's happening. And that leads the best friend into sort of a state of secrecy. And there's all kinds of secrets that become revealed later in the book to the main character. But tragedy takes place and there's this whirlwind of activities. And then the main character kind of finds herself dealing with the aftermath of all of that, which is where the mental health comes into play, because something awful has happened and now this main character doesn't know how to fully deal with that. And so I kind of go into the depths of what that experience is like, the grief, the guilt, the accountability, the silence. And then from there, there's this sort of transformative event that takes place that leads that main character now into this new phase of openness and honesty and sharing this story with everyone around her. And she realizes the power of her own voice and what that can really accomplish when she is sharing what has happened and why. And that sort of transforms into this whole movement that carries people through the end of the book. And it is very much a message of inspiration, motivation around these topics. And most importantly, that fundamental message of we all need to be talking openly and speaking up about these things.
I can see how you two ladies got connected. It's like you have the same kind of message.
It's the same. I think it's the silence that bothers me the most around bullying or even around narcissism, is that people feel like they have to keep it inside and that eats them alive, literally. And it's all about like, how do you try to normalize that conversation and people not be embarrassed about it? Like, I have kids in grade 9. I have twins that age. And
that's right.
Even when they share things that are happening with them at school, particularly my daughter, there's a lot of times I'm like, that's bullying, you know, and sometimes it's their friends, right?
Yes.
Like, so it's not as easy for them to recognize it.
Yeah.
And they actually might share more about it, but not connecting the two that might be unhealthy.
Yes.
So there's the silence part, and then there's also this part where it's like common and they're not even realizing it. And I kind of had a similar thing in Feathers Matter, where it's like Hallie knew she was missing feathers, which is the teardowns. But then there was times where she was missing feathers and didn't recognize it, didn't even know that it was happening, because it's so subtle, right?
Yes.
The silence, though, that just makes me so sad.
And I'm happy you brought that up too, because I've been connecting with other people just about this topic over the last few years. And a few experts or people that have actually gone through it, you know, their own stories, have always stated some connection to their friends and stating that, and I mean, this wasn't the case when I was growing up. We didn't do this. I don't recall ever being a part of anything like this, but there's this commonality, this bullying, as you call it, among friends, where it's like your friend may call you a name that makes you very uncomfortable or makes you feel upset or ashamed. But right after, they'll follow that by just joking or, you know, why are you freaking out? I'm your friend. Doesn't matter. I don't mean it. But then why are you saying it? And why are we perpetually doing these things that make our friends uncomfortable or feel sad and ashamed, even though, you know, they had no part in that name and they don't like it. So it's actually one of the examples that I bring up when I do school talks, because with all these young kids, I see sometimes you got to make small yet meaningful changes in your everyday life to start making a solution around these problems. And one of them might be so simple as, you know, that name that your friend calls you, they think it's funny, but you really don't. And somehow find a way, maybe you write it to them, or maybe you just pull them aside in a very non-threatening manner and somehow tell them, I really don't like it when you call me that. can you please stop? You know, a good friend will stop. And that will be kind of your next answer into what is this relationship?
And I would just say boys are probably even worse because one, a lot of boys that are 15 years old, 13, 16, they don't talk much anyway to their parents and they sure don't want to be made fun of. And I'm not saying that girls don't. I'm just saying at least we do hear, right, from Summer that, oh, so-and-so is saying this and she may not recognize it, but we're at least hearing it from her. The boys, we're not really hearing that, right? We do hear them gaming and that seems like they're bullying each other. That sounds like they're all bullying each other in that regard. But yeah, from the standpoint of, you know, I remember being a teenage boy and exactly what you just said, Katie, you would say things to your friend that was hurtful and maybe you didn't mean anything by it, but well, we're just boys, just boys being boys. But if a friend were to say to me, I would hope if they were to say to me like, hey, I really don't like that, that it would hit my heart, hurt my heart. And I would stop and change that behavior and be a real friend for them. And that's in all of our relationships, right? It's something that's hurting us. We're trying to better ourselves so that we don't go down that path anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
How much do you think social media has made this problem worse?
Oh, so many ways. I have so many things to say about social media. You know, my biggest thing is we, as adults, we were all thrown this tool, this new tool that none of us knew how to use. We still don't know how to use it or manage it. And now we're handing these phones to our young ones, some families younger more than older, and saying, here you go, have fun, and expecting that they won't get into trouble or expecting that it won't lead to something unfavorable. And for even for those of us that I feel are aware and that want to manage it in some way, the cut and dry way to do that is also so unclear. And I think we need to go back to open and honest dialogue within our families, first and foremost. So I've already started talking to my kids about social media and trying to, you know, sometimes I'll just say to them things like, when you go to a friend's house for a play date, if anyone ever says to you, hey, come take a bunch of pictures with me, or hey, let's put up a YouTube video, you can be on my channel, or whatever it is, because my kids always talking about YouTube these days and the channel and this and that. And I said, if you ever want to make a channel, we will sit down and make a plan for that. And we'll make sure that you are safe about it, that you know exactly the way it works. And it will be your channel. It won't be you filming for someone else's channel, because the one message I really wanted to get across there was once something is put online with you in it, it is there forever. And I feel that that is a reality that a lot of kids can't even fully grasp at a young age. And even some adults like, oh yeah, yeah, we can fix that. I mean, in the story of Amanda Todd, that was completely unfixable. Now there are laws that have come out since then to help in certain scenarios, but it's still, they need to know, like, you know, they need to think things through in that flash judgment. And then of course, just knowing the risks of online, and maybe if you have an unprivate account, what can happen? I think we need to be honest with our kids. And then second to that, I do believe there needs to be some form of management. So what are you doing on there? We need to know about it. Or what is it that you want the account for? Or how much time would you like to spend on there a day? You know, all these kinds of things. And yes, I do think social media has made it worse, because as many people have said, it really is this shield up in front of everybody, right? I can be super, super mean behind my computer, but will I have the guts to say that stuff to your face? Maybe, but maybe not. And, you know, it gives people this extra added awful sense of courage when that's not doing anybody any good. And it's only making matters worse.
Keyboard ninjas, as I like to call them. They're keyboard ninjas. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm really tough behind the keyboard. But then when I get out in front, I don't even have a black belt. Like I'm not very good at anything, but because I'm not going to say it to your face, but behind the keyboard, I'm a ninja back there.
I see it a lot. Even just small example of like the, when kids are around kids that all have cell phones. So they reach that age where like their entire group has cell phones. So the snapping of pictures, to your point, is almost traumatic for kids, especially when they really care about their image. Like girls very much are like, let me see that picture. You know, if they take a picture, everybody has to approve it. They want to make sure they look a certain way. But then the fear is that someone's going to take a bad picture of you and post it out there. I'm not even saying like inappropriate, just maybe a picture that they feel like they don't look good in. Like even something so basic almost that you know, would even not even think about.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh.
But it's so true. We didn't and we didn't have that problem back when we were kids. Like, we were never worried that someone was gonna take a weird picture and someone else was gonna see it. That didn't even exist.
No, we had no idea what that was gonna look like.
We had to wait weeks to see a picture.
And so true.
Let's not even get started on Photoshop, right? We couldn't Photoshop anything back then. And now we've got teenagers that are busy Photoshopping their pictures after they happen and make it look even different. So, and they can do that in good and bad ways. Like the Photoshop could be used as a bullying tool at times. So
very true.
Yeah. It is a little bit scary for sure. The amount of bullying and to your point earlier too, around your friends that you get into it one day and they'll say everything that they think. And then 10 minutes later, you want to hang out. It's like, well, that's not okay.
It's not okay. Yeah. Right.
And I'm not like condoning
that. As a parent though, it's hard to even know how you navigate that. Because it's not like the kids feel like they have 10 other friend options either, right?
True.
You know, I mean, especially at a young age, you want to have friends surrounding you. And there's also that pressure of what group that you're in. Then you add on the social media aspect to it. It's so messy.
It really is.
It goes back to a book we read a long time ago that was talking about when you are helping your kids to develop, you want them to be on your team because they're going to pick a team.
Yeah.
Right. If you're not actively helping them to learn that this home, this family is a team, we're here for you no matter what, they are going to pick a team out in the world. And then you're just up for chance as to the team that they end up on, whether it's good friends, bad friends, whatever that might look like.
Yeah, that is so true. And I think that that goes along with, you know, what we're saying about if we're creating that open, honest dialogue at home and always, always letting your kids know that that door is open. It's always open. And, you know, even I think parents underestimate the value of just the little things that they say on a daily basis or a weekly basis or a monthly basis. You know, like we'll often say things here like, we're a team, we're a family team. So let's tackle whatever this is as a team. It could be as easy as just cleaning up the kitchen. But when we're a team, we do it together. We do it better. You know, all those little things, I think, add up to when they come into those more formative, risky years as preteens and teens, do they still always know that door is open? Of course, they're going to tell you less. We can't imagine they're going to tell us everything, maybe the way they do when they're little. But do they know that your door is open? Do they feel that you guys are still a unit? I think that's so critical to their health as they grow into adults.
Yeah, it's almost like keeping that connective cord with them so they know that they can always come back home. That's something I always told Hallie, like, I'm going to be here for you no matter what. Because you also don't want your kids to be in a situation where they're fearful of bringing a problem to, because they might be embarrassed, right? About what the situation they might end up in. So it's that constant, like, no matter what your age, whether you're 14 or 45, like I, as your mom and your family will always be here for you. I agree. Like, even though you may be sharing that in a situation, they don't like tune it out like, yeah, okay, whatever, mom. But saying it, making sure that they know that on a regular basis, that's a great suggestion.
Yeah, I think so. It all adds up over time.
So, Katie, talk to me a little bit about your novel. It's been used as an educational resource in schools at times. How does that work? How did you go about that? And then how does that make you feel? And all the different vibes that go with that.
Well, first and foremost, that is a dream come true for me. So, you know, once I first, to be perfectly honest, when I wrote it and put it into print finally, I kind of just wanted to finish the project and I didn't really think I was going to try to push it and promote it. But once I saw it, once, you know, the big box of sample books came and I thought, oh my gosh, I did this and I now need to spread this word a little bit. And so I did that and there was just much more positive response than I anticipated. And then a few teachers and educators were reaching out to me saying they thought that this could be a potential resource. And then I started talking to more people in that space. And then it really started to look more real in that sense. So yeah, this year is the first year that I've been able to get it into schools. So there's over 300 grade nines reading my novel this school year.
That's awesome.
Which, yeah, like I said, it's just a dream come true. And more importantly than that, it's the way they're responding to it that's the most rewarding. So I've been involved with this one particular, a couple of teachers actually, and just staying in tune with them as they're going through this novel study that they created around this book. And so there was all sorts of pieces involved. So there was first, you know, reading comprehension exercises, literacy questions, then that morphed into almost a media unit where the kids were creating their own projects in and around different themes in the chapters. At the very end, they all put together their own anti-bullying campaign and how they were going to create a movement. So it was just so cool to see all these things come to life in and around my writing. And, you know, a lot of those students reached out to me. One of their assignments was to write a letter to the author and let her know, you know, how do you feel about this book? Did you like reading it in grade nine? Did you not like having it as a novel study? Did you relate to the content? What did you relate to and not relate to? What were the feelings that were brought up as you read this book? How do you feel towards the end of it? What are the kind of takeaways that you could grab from this book after reading it? Do you think you'll remember it or not? Things like that. And I mean, the response was just overwhelming. I had a couple students reach out to me throughout and say how realistic they found this because, and to me, that's the best thing I could hear from a 14 or 15 year old. The fact that this is real, this is what my life feels like, you know, that can resonate with them on a deeper level, which is what I'm really trying to accomplish with this novel is I believe that first we got to make people feel something around this topic. You know, as you were even just saying, Eric, you know, your friend saying, oh, I don't like it when you say that to me. And you would hope that that would hit your heart, right? We're driven by our emotions. We have to first feel something before we can make any kind of positive change in any area of our lives. So that's what I was really going for. I wanted to pull on people's heartstrings. And, you know, so many of the comments were related to how sad they felt for one of the characters. And then the best part was, you know, towards the end, they recited feelings of empowerment and more awareness around this topic to feel better equipped to speak up or to ask a friend if they're okay, or to just have more dialogue in and around this subject matter. So it really has been extremely rewarding. And I'm now trying to take all of that and take those testimonials and all those recounts from teachers and students and get this blown up, so to speak, is my real dream. You know, let's have all grade nines reading this.
Were you able to then read some of the projects that people did? Like, did the teachers allow you to read some of them?
Yes.
Just tears. Yes. I mean, for yourself, emotionally, I can imagine just crying. I would have been crying my eyes out if I was having that kind of impact on somebody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Tears were streaming. And yeah, many projects were shared with me, either from the students themselves or the teacher would get permission from the students to send them my way. And yeah, you know, some of them, one of them was a movie trailer and, you know, based on the book, and a few of the students said, I wish this was a movie we would watch it. And then I thought, ooh, yeah, maybe I could go that route. So yeah, I mean, some of the things just gave me goosebumps and just, like you said, having that kind of impact in someone else's life because of something you wrote is an author's dream come true.
That's amazing. Yeah. I know my favorite thing for Feathers Matter is to read it to little kids and just to get their questions to your point. That's when it really hits home that you are making an impact versus you get the book and that's exciting. But then to actually see people, you know, reaction to something that they don't necessarily know the story. I remember one kid asked me, how come Hallie didn't know that she was missing feathers? And I'm like, that's a great question. Let me share that with you.
Yeah.
You know, because I think, a lot of times if kids growing up in this environment, it's really hard for them to recognize when things are not right, unless you're talking about it, which goes back to the silence thing. Why silence is not good. Is get the conversations out there. Do you think, I think your target audience, as you mentioned, is probably ninth grade. Like 14 to 17, you think? Or what's your age range for this?
Yeah. So what I have said, I think the most ideal ages are grade 8, so 12, 13, because they're about to enter high school. So I think reading it, you know, they're already thinking about high school. Maybe they're already nervous or maybe they're excited, but there's lots of different emotions around that. I remember that time. So, you know, I think that could be very relevant. And then almost getting through to them in an impactful way before they enter high school could perhaps even have a greater positive impact. Grade nine for sure. And then I think, you know, I tell people ideal grade eight, nine, but I think it's still highly relevant through high school as well.
What's your thoughts on parents reading it just to better understand maybe what's happening to our kids?
Yeah.
Have you had any feedback from parents that have read the book?
Yeah. So I've had a lot of parents read it. And what's most interesting about that is, well, I've had a lot of them say, you know, you made me cry, or I was very emotional at this part or this part. Also, because not just the story itself that may be getting through to people or making people feel these strong emotions at certain parts of the book, but because it makes those of us who are a little bit older as parents now, it makes us remember something of our own past. So, for example, I have a very close friend who read it, who lost her husband, and it brought up all those feelings of grief and everything around that. And then I had, you know, other friends talk about the fact that they kind of felt like maybe they weren't always the nicest in high school. And it resurfaced all those kinds of feelings of maybe just reflection and maybe a little bit of guilt too. So it's interesting. I think everyone can relate to it a certain way because we've all been in high school at one point, even if we are older. And to your other point, I do think it is an awareness builder because I don't, you know, another comment from students directly was just, I didn't always think about what could happen if we don't speak up about this or if silence prevails. And so I think that is really important for parents. Maybe that will motivate a parent to ask kids questions about their day or, you know, how's that friend? How's so-and-so? And one of my key pieces of advice for that too, for parents is you always hear parents complaining about the same thing. You know, I asked my kid how his day was and he gave me no, I don't know.
Okay, fine. School.
And my argument to that is, okay, I have found a very clever way that seems to work to get around that. And that I ask a very specific question to start the conversation. So let's say I remembered that something happened with a friend the other day. I'll say, hey, how's so-and-so? Did he say that again? Or was he acting funny in class again? Or did her and you go play that game at recess? And then what I find is I've opened the door. And then everything about the day will eventually come out. Maybe not everything, but lots more things will come out. So I invite parents to think about something specific or a presentation they were doing or a project. But then specific, not just how did it go? How'd your presentation go? But yeah, did you find that? Do you think you were loud enough? Do you think people were hearing you in the back? Or, you know, did you feel nervous? How, you know, things like that to just get them going. And then I find, you know, sometimes that's floodgates, not always, but it's, and it also lets your kids know that you're listening to things they've said on another day. Oh, my parents paying attention. They knew these other things were going on and we are in this together.
Yeah, that's great. We do struggle with that a lot with the kids of just like you want more detail about their day. And I also feel like their school day, especially at that age, right? It's like a lot. And they just want to like decompress.
True.
That's always a challenge, I feel like. How did you come up with the title? Because, you know, when you're writing a book, titles matter for sure. So you want to share a little bit?
I have such an interesting story about that one. So I originally titled the book Bystander No More. That's when I originally wrote the manuscript. After I wrote this manuscript for a couple of years, I literally just set it aside. And I went through this whole battle of almost imposter syndrome, I think, if I had to define it, because I was still running my business. At that point, my kids were really, really little, like just born little. So I was very busy and I was still managing my business and sort of tackling things that way. And I also recall saying to myself, well, you know, just something I maybe wrote for fun. I don't think I'm going to do anything with it. I'm not a fiction writer. I'm a nonfiction writer. If anything, I'm going to write a nonfiction book. That was just my little starter project. All these kinds of excuses coming in. And it wasn't until my kids got a bit older. And then I was like, okay, I'm writing another book now. That was my thing. I'm like I forget what year it was, 2020 or 2019. I'm writing a book. And then I went back and I thought, wait a second, I have a book sitting on my computer. Maybe I should at least read it, see if I like it. And so I started to read it and I loved it. And I mean, I'm biased, I guess, but I was compelled by the content and I keep reading. And then I thought to myself, no, I'm going to I'm going to update this now because I wanted to make more cyber in there, more, you know, Ubers in there and smartphones. And there's more of that. So I updated it to be more current, changed a bunch of names and made all kinds of different changes there. And then I was sitting there with the title and I was kind of debating the title. And I was talking to my husband and he said, I don't think that's a good enough title for this book. You need something better. And I thought, okay.
Did you receive that feedback just like that? You were like, okay, like very...
You know what? I honestly did because
that goes in our house. One of us is like, yes. Oh, thank you for that. No?
Oh, I don't think I said thank you, but you know what? My husband and I have a, you know, he runs his own business and we constantly are kind of helping each other out in this regard. So I know that he'll be, I was most nervous for him to read the book once it was in print, just because we are that honest with each other. And I know that I'll get the most honest feedback from him. And then I kind of think deep down, I agreed because I agreed. I thought, I don't think this maybe is strong enough. So then for weeks, I remember all back and forth and this and that and trying out this and trying out that. And then we were just kind of spitballing one day in the family room. And then I remember I'm like, you know, it was something like maybe there's certain ways out this. I'm like, the only way out, that has to be it. It just kind of like came and that was it. And I think it is a way better title. Yes. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, I think so.
The title is powerful. It will catch people.
And you know why? Yeah. And you know why I think it's better than the one before? I wanted to get this message across of, you know, even if you're a bystander, you got to speak up. You know, there is bystanding going on in the book. So I wanted that message to be, that, you know, no more bystanders kind of thing. But this title is so much better because in my mind, and as I'm reading and changing, and if I look back on all these things and even thinking about this whole problem now, there is only one way out at the start. I'm not saying it's the full solution, but if we don't first, if we're having a problem, if we don't talk about it, we can't get to the next part of the solution. So there's only one way to start to get out of it, and that is talking openly and speaking up.
Talking's healing too. I find that just myself, like whether you're writing it down, It's getting the words out in one format or another.
Yes.
It's powerful to be able, and even for me, there's a lot of times where I don't necessarily want to talk about it, but getting it out, whether that's tears, that's another expression. However you can get that emotion out, that's healing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They often say, you know, talking and writing, it can be a cathartic process. So you know, I strongly believe in that too. Don't keep things bottled up. That's only going to bottle until some kind of explosion. I strongly believe that, you know, as human beings, some of us might feel as though, okay, I'm more introverted. I don't want to talk about this kind of stuff. Well, then find your outlet. It doesn't need to be the typical one of just talking to somebody, but writing, like you said, even speaking into a recorder. And I truly believe we all, I hope, have at least one person that we can maybe trust to just unload a few things on or have a good venting session.
Absolutely. I was just going to ask you, so are you going to write another book? Like, what's the next thing for you?
Yeah. So I did write a workbook that goes along with this novel that's also already in print because I wanted to kind of have the full package for teachers that maybe want to have a mini unit, so to speak, on this. Also, even for parents, if they wanted to kind of do this kind of stuff or just pass it to their kids who they think it might be helpful. So I like the workbook too, because it's kind of as though, you know, the first book I wanted people to feel something. And then with the workbook, I want to take all of those feelings and put them into action. So there's educational components. There's visual exercises, there's stuff they can fill in right in the book. It's a lot about personal reflection and inviting kids to set your own goals and then work that within your life and make these small yet meaningful changes every day that equate to an overall happier life for you and the people around you. That's kind of what that's all about. And in terms of right now, I'm working on a children's book and I'm actually writing and illustrating that. So that's my latest fun challenge. I've taught myself to be an illustrator. I could always draw ever since I was a teen and I took some art classes and stuff. But now taking that and finding a way to digitize it, and I've taught myself Adobe Illustrator. Wow. That's my happy project. You know, I'm always smiling when I'm doing that project.
Awesome. I was just going to say, both of you, I would never think to do a hand, like a a handbook to go with something I've written, but both of you have written like questionnaire handbooks to go with the books that you've written to give other people an opportunity, parents, educators, something to work through with the kids. And so not shocking that you have found each other somewhere. Yeah. Oh, I need the biggest guy ever. I'm like, just, I need a big handbook that I'm working through. You ladies are on it for sure. Where can people buy the book, Katie?
The easiest place to buy the book is Amazon, wherever you are in the world, .com, .ca, overseas. It's on all those outlets. Here in Canada, it's also at Chapters and Indigo. And it's really at all kinds of retailers throughout the States and the world, to be honest with you. So I've tried to make the reach as convenient as possible for people, but I still think Amazon is the easiest.
Oh, swipe to buy. Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Well, we have one last question for you. Mm-hmm. And we ask all of our podcast guests this question. What is your favorite tradition?
Hmm. Oh, I like that.
Sometimes we like our guests so much that we steal them and then we use them. Yeah. That's really.
I like that too. Yeah, one comes to mind actually, because we have a family birthday coming up soon. So one tradition that started when I was a kid it was my mom's side of the family with our grandparents, my aunt and uncle, my cousins, my parents, and me. I'm an only. So every time we would get together and it was somebody's birthday, we would do the most ridiculous birthday song you could ever picture in your life. So we had pots, pans, spoons. We had instruments. We had banging on the table. I remember at one point when one of my cousins was a teenager, he was trying to do the, that's my Italian side of the family. So he's 100% Italian. And he would try to do the, you know, the sounds like.
Oh, like beatboxing. Yeah.
Okay. So beatboxing. He would do that in the background and we're seeing all these crazy. And so it was so loud. It'd be hurting your ears and it's not in tune at all. It's just the craziest happy birthday song. So it's something I've carried on into my own family life. So whenever it's one of our core four birthdays, first thing in the morning, like I grab all the old kids' instruments that they don't even use anymore from the basement. It's like we got drums and ukuleles and all this stuff. And we come in blaring and everyone knows it's coming when it's their day.
That's
the tradition.
We maybe not pick up that one. I don't know. What is it like? Big family. They're already loud. I don't know if they need to add more.
That's true.
You gotta really feel safe with your partner when you introduce that to your husband. You're like, hey, here's what, because they're like, what the heck is this?
I don't know that he loves it.
That's awesome. That's so good. All right, Katie, one more time. Tell everybody the name of your book, Amazon, we've covered, about your socials, your website, all of that before we wrap today.
Sure. Thank you so much. So the name of the novel is The Only Way Out, written by myself, Katie Cooperman. You can find me on all the major socials, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, X. I still feel weird saying that. Everywhere, I'm either Katie Cooperman or Katie Cooperman Writes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today and the impact that you're having on our kids and the future generations. And I look forward to seeing your children's book when it comes out too. So
thank you so much. I'm so honored to have been here. Thank you for the time. And it's been such a pleasure talking with you both.
Thank you. Everybody have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for listening and God bless.
Thank you for listening to Blended Blessed and Always a Mess. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and at blendedblessedalwaysamess.com.
Reach out to us on any of our social channels. We would love to hear from you. Have a great week.